Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Guys, and welcome to The First Degree, the true crime podcast that you might end up on. I'm your host, Jack Vanek. I'm sitting across from Alexis Linkletter and next to Billy Jensen. Like always, how are we doing tonight?
I think we're good.
I think we're pretty wonderful.
I'm a little bit nervous about this one.
Yes. So this case is our second crowdsourced case. It came from a girl in our Facebook group. So everybody join our Facebook group, get on our socials. But it is f***ed up.
It is,
like, I don't know what better word to describe
I'm actually scared to do it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to offend anybody and I don't want to upset anybody, but it's such an underreported case that I feel like...
We have to.
I hate this case.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of... I want you guys to hear it, but I hate this case.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
So
it's disturbing.
Upsetting.
It's depraved. So here's our little warning, like, listener discretion advised. Proceed with caution.
Today's case is set in Joliet, Illinois, which is a town that's 30 miles southwest of Chicago. And it's the fourth largest city or town or whatever you want to describe it as in Illinois. So it's not a small town.
No, it's a town famous for its prison.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Joliet. Didn't you guys ever see Blues Brothers?
No.
All right. Okay. All right. Joliet, Jake. That's where the Blues Brothers were. Okay, Joliet Prison is a giant prison. It's incredibly famous.
I had no idea.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, that's what Joliet's known for.
But also kind of odd, again, that this case didn't get that much coverage if it comes from, you know, a place that is kind of surrounded by that.
Exactly. It's so strange. And this entire story, where they normally do start with a 911 call, this one starts with a call made by a daughter to her father. And Bill McKee is the father in this case, and he answered a call from his 18-year-old daughter, Bethany McKee. And on the phone call, she had a disturbing, chilling request for her father. She said that she and her friends needed help disposing of the bodies of two men that they had murdered a day or so earlier in a house on Hickory Street, which is in a suburban neighborhood in Joliet. Now, on the phone, clearly he was shocked, disgusted, horrified, all the emotions a father would experience when a daughter has a request like that. But he did agree to help. However, as soon as he hung up, he obviously called the Joliet Police Department. And what the police would find at this Hickory Street home and what they would eventually learn from the four young people involved in these murders would be what nightmares are made of. And I have to say that, I know we've said it before, the level of depravity in this case, it's like nothing I've heard in quite a while. And the bulk of the information and research for this case came from either the Joliet Patch or court documents. The reporter for the Joliet Patch was given police documents, which detailed, you know, verbatim transcripts of what the suspects said. So that's where we're getting all this info. This is not hearsay. It's very reputable information. And like we said, the accounts are explicit, troubling, callous, and you get the picture. So Bill McKee calls the police after getting this disturbing call from his daughter, and they are dispatched to the house on Hickory Street. And Billy, what do they find there?
So let me paint the picture of the exterior of the house at first. It definitely doesn't live up to whatever vision you have of the nightmare on Hickory Street probably evokes. It's a pretty unremarkable house. It's tan with white trim. Two stories, chain link fence around it. Nothing was alarming about the exterior of the home when the Joliet police approached and they said they got a call.
So when the cops knocked on the door, they met an 18-year-old girl named Elisa Massaro, and she told the officers that there are currently two other people in the house with her, 24-year-old Josh Miner was upstairs and 19-year-old Adam Landerman was down in the basement. And when police went to approach Adam, he was lying in fetal position and he refused to talk to them. And then he finally stood up and turned toward them with a massive grin on his face.
Right. And then they went up to the bedroom to find Josh Miner. And he was sitting on the couch smoking a cigarette with this really nonchalant attitude. And he coldly said to the cops, "I did the guy with the dreadlocks." He then told them that his friend Adam killed the other one. When the police entered, another thing that they noticed is that everyone still seemed to be partying. They had Grand Theft Auto up on the TV screen. They had mirrors out because they were doing cocaine, open beers everywhere. They didn't immediately understand the gravity of the situation here.
Nor did they try to cover anything or hide anything.
Not trying to cover. No remorse, no explanation, just very
whatever.
Matter of fact, very whatever, very cavalier. The mind boggles, truly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the crazy thing, because there were two other men in the house, two other bodies in the house. Eric Glover and Terrence Rankins, they were both dead. They were both 22 years old. They had been strangled. And someone had tied plastic bags around their heads. Both bodies were face down, and they had already showed signs of rigor mortis. One of the bodies was laying on top of a black garbage bag that had been separated at the seams with a white plastic bag around his head. And the head of the other body had been wrapped in a red plastic bag and was resting on a pillow. And the room they were found in was a mess. There was piles of dirty laundry, extension cords around them. There was a tan sheet over the men and a mattress on the floor nearby.
Okay, this is so disturbing. So who are these two victims then? Who are these two dead 22-year-olds? They're kids, for Christ's sake. But who are right. they? Who's Terrence and Eric?
So Eric Glover and Terrence Rankins had been best friends for more than 5 years. Eric graduated from Juliet Central High School. He made the honor roll. He was on wrestling and track. And he also played minor league football in the area and coached youth football with his stepdad. So he was a good kid. He had a fiance, and the couple was supposed to get married a month after Terrence and Eric were killed. Terrence was described as a very outgoing, loving person. His mother said that he had hoped to go to college and wanted to be a social worker. He liked making music, dancing, and playing sports. So these were just two normal, good kids. One was going to get married. They're just normal, everyday guys.
Right. And Billy said that, of course, they had already entered into rigor mortis, which is generally happens 8 hours or so after a murder. So they were missing for at least 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But they had actually been missing for over 24 hours. And the parents of both boys had been worried sick when they both decided to go out and then never returned. So the night that they went missing, Eric watched a movie with his mom, stepdad, and fiance. And he left about 6 p.m. saying that he had to go drive Terrence somewhere. And Terrence and his mother were very close. So she called him a number of times after it started to get late to see where he was. And he never responded, which is really uncharacteristic of him. She then texted him. He didn't respond. And his phone was under her phone plan. So she then called her cell phone provider and to see if she could track where the phone was and mm-hmm. do the Find My iPhone type thing, but tried to track down this phone to see if they could place where he was. They couldn't do that, but they could tell him the last person he had a call with. And that was Bethany McKee, who we've already been introduced to in this story.
Ever since I turned 30, my main goal is to get pieces of clothing and accessories and shoes that are good quality that will last me a long time. I'm done buying all like really crappy quality stuff that's gonna break in like 2 days. So when I was looking for shoes, I came across this brand and I'm so stoked that they're one of our sponsors. M. Gemmi is amazing. They're redefining the luxury Italian footwear market. They're taking all the things that we love about the industry, like unparalleled quality, family-owned workshops, and personalized concierge-level service, and they're leaving behind the luxury price tag. So these shoes are affordable and absolutely amazing. They're made in the same family-owned workshops in Italy where items from most of the well-known luxury brands are made, and they're handcrafted, and they have a direct relationship with the workshop, so you get the same quality as all these luxury brands for a third of the price. So if you guys want to go check them out and see how amazing their shoes are, go to mgemi.com/firstdegree. That's mgemi.com/firstdegree, and you can get $50 off your first pair. I just got an amazing knee-high pair of leather heeled boots. I love them. Go to mgemi.com/firstdegree.
Bethany McKee was the girl who called her dad, obviously, asking for help and getting rid of these bodies. And our first degree guest today has a really fascinating connection to her. And her name's Sarah, and she was actually a teacher to Bethany and came in contact with Adam, too. Adam and Bethany went to the same school, and Sarah was a teacher at this school. So we are going to hear from her right now.
My name is Sarah, and my first degree connection is that I was a teacher for one of the students who was involved in the Nightmare on Hickory Street murder. I taught Bethany. So I started in the middle of the year, and so it was her last semester of high school. And when I first came into the classroom, she was very quiet. She was reserved. I think she had blue hair at the time, so I think in her picture she has blue hair too. She just had the demeanor of kind of a grumpy old lady. I remember her staying alone a lot. No one really wanted to, you know, you don't want to really talk to her too much because she might be upset with you or might get angry at you. She would leave early to go take care of her child. But overall, I mean, she was a good student. She did all her work. She was there because she needed to get the credits and get her high school diploma. So other than that, she really didn't cause too many problems.
Okay, so what did you guys think of Sarah's first impression of Bethany McKee?
So we pretty much have that she kind of didn't have any friends. She was a little bit grumpy. I think that, I mean, knowing this case, that makes sense.
So now we know about Bethany. We've got kind of a glimpse behind the curtain of who Bethany is. But what about the other three? What are their deals?
So Elisa was the 18-year-old who lived at that house on Hickory Street, and she lived there with her dad. She'd been friends with Bethany and Adam Landerman for years. Bethany had been one of her childhood friends for a long, long time. And Adam's mother is a police sergeant at the Joliet Police Department, which is bonkers.
That is horrible.
I mean, I just can't imagine what his mom...
The whole thing is horrible.
Put upset. Yeah,
the whole thing is horrible, no, but the mom who's sworn to serve and protect.
Like, can you, I mean, I can't even.
No, I can't fathom. But of course, our first degree connection didn't just meet Bethany. Adam went to the same school, so she had an encounter with him also. So let's hear what she had to say about him.
I'm not sure if it was weeks or months later. She did bring her child in to visit with Adam, who was a former student. I never had him, but he was a former student at the school that we were at. So he came and visited other staff that had been there. And so she brought her child with Adam to just visit, because sometimes students, we're all they have for a lot of students. So they want to come visit and just kind of thank you for everything that you've done. So it was kind of like that. She was, you know, missing us and thanking us. I didn't know Adam personally, but I've had students that have parents as cops or come from really good families, and they are just, kind of looking to rebel against them. And I think it's because he hasn't had to go to jail or he hasn't had any consequences because he has that safety net to fall back on. I think a lot of students think, teenagers in particular, think that they're invincible, and they are pushing the boundaries for sure.
So we talked about Elisa, we talked about Bethany, we talked a little bit about Adam. Let's talk about Josh Minor.
Okay. So Josh Minor was actually the oldest of the four, and he had a pretty serious criminal record. When he was 16, he pled guilty to filming a child pornography video. In 2010, the jury convicted him of residential burglary, and inside prison, the judge enrolled the heavy drug user into some sort of a boot camp program. Josh and Elisa had this on-again, off-again relationship, but they've been involved for a few years. And although Josh and Elisa were a couple, At one point, she filed a restraining order against Josh, clearly during one of those off-again periods.
Okay, now, as far as Josh goes, this is a really unique situation because a reporter was able to get into the jail while Josh was waiting to go to trial. And they were able to conduct a number of interviews with Josh. So we can actually give you a peek into the mind of this depraved individual. And this will really help you guys get a glimpse into the kind of people we are dealing with here.
I slit my tongue with, I had a tongue piercing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a string through it. And then I took the string and I tightened it. And I started sawing the pulling it and sawing it. And then it split.
And why would you do that?
Because my birthday is June 30th. I was like my golden birthday. Mm-hmm. I was going to turn into a freak. I wanted white gold fangs on my teeth. I wanted fangs. I wanted my tongue split. And I wanted my ears pitted. Like I wanted them like shaped like a bat or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm in the ICP, like Insane Clown Posse. And the brittle box is my card, I guess you could say. And it's like a snake clown. It's like a snake clown.
Okay.
So I wanted that. And my entire life, I was always into horror movies and freaky ass things and stuff like that. And so I wanted to be a real vampire. I dreamt about it. I read a lot of books. Like actual books of history, like Dracul and all the Blood the Impaler and all them. I wanted to be an actual vampire, and I was looking for things and all this other stuff. It was just some outrageous shit. And when I think about shit, it's like I don't know how to explain things. Like I'm a walking oxymoron. Like when I feel, but I don't feel. I see things, but I don't care about them. But I'd literally take the shirt off my back to help somebody. But then I'll just turn around and I'll take another person's shirt off their back. Like I wouldn't care. I don't know exactly how to explain it. It's just I'm a good person, but I got a good heart, but I got a bad soul.
I have a lot of feelings about that.
Oh my God.
So many things
that
to
is
say.
A chilling thing to hear.
First of all, he's very self-aware of kind of how messed up his brain is. And he's almost a poet in the way that he describes it at the end, which is really chilling.
What bothers me, it's like he's reveling in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows what he's about to go on trial for.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like leaning into it,
yeah,
and trying,
yeah,
to disturb people and trying to just own the fact that he's this like bad motherfucker who has done these hard things. And I feel like it's this.
See, I don't feel like he's saying it like that, though. I think he's kind of explaining himself in like a matter of fact way.
But I think he's trying to just be the monster. He's trying to portray himself as the monster.
He's trying to physically.
I've got a good heart.
But a bad
but
soul.
But a bad soul.
I wonder if that's an ICP lyric.
No, I think he's rehearsed this. Like, this is the kind of guy he is. That's something I feel like he practiced. Those are metaphors that are kind of poignant.
Yeah.
Those were not off the cuff.
And I looked up that riddle box that he said that he was, whatever he was trying to do. And it's one of their albums. And it's this clown that has a split tongue. So that's what he was trying to turn himself into.
A split tongue. I don't know. What do you guys make of just, I know there are a million normal people who do it, but the body modification, he wanted to do his ears and he wanted to do all of these other things. Does that?
I think the thing that's disturbing about it is not that he wanted to do any of this. I think it's the fact that he split his tongue in two with a string.
We talked a little bit about the victims. We talked a bit about the four suspects, the four perpetrators in this case. But how exactly did they know each other? How did they end up at that house that night?
Friends of the victim say that Terrence and Eric were called to the home by Bethany, and she invited them over, and she ended up bringing his friend Alex. So she really invited Terrence.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Terrence invited
Eric.
Said like, oh, I'm bringing Eric over. And she said, okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think she knew. I think it was a surprise.
He just like showed up with Eric.
Right.
Yeah.
But she was the honeypot in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So Terrence had actually talked to a friend on the phone while he was partying with the four kids. And he actually jokes that they were telling him that him and Eric had been kidnapped. He said that they told him, "You aren't going home tonight." And he said he thought it was a joke.
Right. Terrence laughed it off.
Yeah.
Because
he does laugh.
I mean, nobody's going to take that seriously.
No, it's like, you're not leaving. Oh,
like,
oh,
ha ha.
Okay. Drunk,
yeah.
Drinking.
Great.
Yeah. It's a joke. And he's like, cool. Hold me hostage, hot chicks. Whatever.
Right.
You know.
But another friend of Terrence shared a photo that had been posted on Instagram about 2 days before his murder. It is a picture, actually, that Terrence had taken of Adam and Bethany, who are facing each other in the picture with a mirror in Adam's lap.
Yeah, they do
a mirror from some cocaine. Yeah.
Yes. So what this is setting up here is that they were friends. They were friends. They had been hanging out 2 days before this at a different, you know, hang or a different shindig at the same house. They were not strangers. They weren't great friends. They were acquaintances. And, you know, it was also rumored that Bethany and Terrence had a thing. That's how this connection was made. This is how they were invited over. And then they started hanging out with this group. And Elisa and Bethany had been best friends, and this is just kind of how all of them were brought together.
First Degree is brought to you by Penguin Random House Audio. If you love a thrilling mystery series, try listening to the audio. Main characters like Juan Cabrillo and Stone Barrington come to life through your earbuds while listening to the latest novels by Clive Cussler and Stuart Woods. Or maybe you just want to catch up on John Sanford's Virgil Flower series before the next one, Holy Ghost, comes out. So listen to the audiobooks. Audiobooks are a great way to keep up with your favorite series and be ready for the next book to hit the stands. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/series to start listening today.
Now, we've got the background on the victims and the suspects. So let's rewind back to the day this happened. Elisa, Adam, and Josh were arrested on the scene after Bethany's dad called the cops, after Bethany had made this disturbing request to her father. Bethany was arrested at her home shortly after because she wasn't there when the cops arrived. When she was in custody, she said the last time she left the Hickory Street house, both men were still alive. Now, to be clear, if you search online, there are many conflicting accounts of what happened that night. All four suspects were interrogated. Their stories varied, of course, to cover their own asses and take the heat off them. And of course, that's what criminals do. They shift blame and all of that. So we're, for the most part, going by the accounts of the events outlined in court documents, specifically from Bethany McKee's trial. So we will also cover some of the details outlined in the Joliet patch. And these are very reputable also, though, because they come directly from the police documents.
Right.
But generally, court documents are a little bit more streamlined and a little bit more, you know, cleansed. This is going to be horrific, but we did take, believe it or not, a lot of it out. So we're doing our best. So again, brace yourselves, because this is the account of that night.
All right, so it all started in January of 2013. Bethany and her 15-month daughter were staying in Elisa's house in Joliet. Elisa's room was on the top floor, and her father lived on the first floor. On the night of the murders, Elisa decided to have a little shindig. Adam and Josh came over to hang out with them and drink and do whatever the hell they were doing. They started partying, and they realized that they were short on money to buy booze and cigarettes, so they started discussing how they're going to come up with money.
Right as they were having this conversation, Bethany received a text from Terrence, a guy she had this on-again, off-again thing with. And he essentially just asked her if she wanted to hang out and drink that night with him and his friend Eric. So Bethany was sitting with the others, mentioned to the group that Terrence always had cash on him and happened to be reaching out to her at that moment. So that's when Josh interjected. He bragged to the group that he for sure could beat up, kill, and rob Terrence and Eric.
Do we think at this point when somebody's like, oh yeah, I could kill that guy, like, do other people take, are your people taking you seriously on that claim?
I think I've heard a lot of crimes start this way. I think the first joke, no. And then I think things start to escalate and they're all joking, but one person, again, I'm of a school of thought where I believe Josh is the ringleader.
Mm-hmm.
I think the rest are too stupid and cowardly to have ever actually
done this on their own
or thought of it. I don't know. I just think the rest are just lemmings who went along with this psychopath, who has a total lack of empathy. But, you know, at this point, Adam then chimed in and volunteered to help.
But then you have Terrence, and Terrence is just I mean, he's just he just wants to hang out with her. You know? I mean, think about that. Think about the
innocence of that.
Innocence of a guy that just wants to go and hang out with a girl.
Maybe
a girl
that
he likes. Maybe get a smooch. And he's walking into his end.
Yeah.
Think about that. He's walking into his end.
And then Eric just gives his friend a ride and probably is like, hey, dude, come in for one drink.
It's just like the wrong place.
Come
the
in
wrong
for
time.
One drink, dude. Like, how many times has that been you and I, Jack?
Yeah.
I've driven you. It's like, just come have one drink. No, I don't want to. My fiance's at home, which is what Eric had at home.
Mm-hmm.
I just said I was giving Terrence a ride. Dude, just come in for one drink. You start playing video games.
Yeah.
The nights gets carried away. And before you know it, a tragedy strikes.
Yeah.
And it's like, you all just had no idea that your life, that was the last day of your life.
And do we know if Terrence knew that there are other guys at the house, or did he just think it was Bethany and Elisa?
No. So Bethany led Terrence to believe that essentially Eric and Terrence were coming over to hang out with Elisa and Bethany.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they were just an empty house with two women.
Yeah.
So it was a surprise that the guys were there. But again,
they're probably just like, whatever.
The Instagram posts prove that
they knew each other.
They knew each other.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a huge deal. And they all started playing video games and it was no harm, no foul.
Right.
The partying continued.
Okay.
But they go over there and apparently the group had set up a signal to indicate when Bethany and Elisa were to leave the room so Josh and Adam could put this plan into action.
Mm-hmm. So basically, Terrence and Eric are coming over to think that they're hanging out with Bethany and Elisa. But they come over, Josh and Adam are both there. They all start hanging out. But before they came over, the group of four kind of came up with this signal that the guys would say to the girls, and then they would know to leave because they didn't want to be there when they were going to get whatever was going to happen.
Or whatever, yeah. This attack.
Which, who knows who knew what it was going to be. So
I mean, just think about that, though. Like, you're inviting two people over. And how many times have you done that? When you're sitting around drinking with friends, playing video games, whatever, two guys come over, and you're all just looking at each other being like, all right, well, when are we going to hear that signal?
Yeah. I wonder what the signal was.
I wonder what the energy was like. And I wonder if they tried to get them drunk first. I mean,
But I wonder how serious everybody thought it was going to be. And if everybody was just hanging out, was it like a good night? And then all of a sudden, you know, you get the signal. And when Josh gave him the signal, Bethany picked up her daughter and she left the upstairs apartment and Elisa went with her. So the girls are out of the house.
Well, they're downstairs.
Or upstairs.
They're downstairs.
Downstairs.
With Elisa's dad.
Oh, shit.
The dad is home. So let's just say that. The dad is home. But not only that, I want to talk real quick about how Bethany has brought a child into this world and then has such a lack, like, this is all very casual. You know, it's like, that's what boggles my mind about, listen, I know your brain isn't fully developed till you're 26. I actually do believe that. But I feel like the empathy you'd have for your own child is something that would mature your perspective on human life and the value of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she could sit there with her baby and have this discussion about, okay, yeah, let's rob them and kill them. And then, you know,
well, was it rob them and kill them or was it just rob them?
Even so, it's,
she said, I could,
I could
beat up and kill them.
But even if she thought that he was joking, say that she thought that Josh was joking, and they're still trying to lure these two guys in to rob them, or God knows, to whatever kind of fight you're starting to make, that could escalate in many ways. The other guys could fight back. Somebody could have brought a gun. Like, you have no idea how people are going to react. So to bring your child that is a year old into that, regardless of what you think the outcome is going to be, is absolutely insane.
Also, cocaine mirrors, beer.
Yeah, you're wasted.
Everything. It's just, it's a disaster. So, Sarah, our first degree connection, she told me that she met the baby and she met Bethany with the baby and she observed some interactions between them. So let's hear what that was like, because that doesn't sound like a very responsible move to me.
And her kid was at the situation or the crime scene at one point as well. And it just baffles my mind, like, you know, why would you even think to bring your child around, even if you weren't going to go through with whatever happens there, why would you bring your child into that kind of environment, you know, if there's drugs and alcohol and whatnot? But these these students that we've had at our school, you know, obviously I'm not trying to condone what they've done. But a lot of the students have extremely, extremely, messed up backgrounds, where they were definitely brought into that kind of environment before. So it could just be, you know, this is what my parents did, so I'm going to do this. Maybe not the murdering part, but I mean, definitely bringing them around, you know, some shady people and drugs and alcohol and things like that.
So hacking and stealing user data aren't just things out of spy thrillers and action movies. This is something that happens every day to a lot of people, and it's actually kind of scary. Now, I mean, when I'm surfing the internet, I'm pretty much looking up, I don't know, like JonBenet Ramsey conspiracy theories, but I still don't want a hacker stealing my information. It's just creepy and scary. So that's why I love one of our new sponsors, ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. And turning ExpressVPN on only takes one click. It secures and makes your internet browsing anonymous by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. And using ExpressVPN, you can safely surf the public Wi-Fi without being snooped or having your personal data stolen. So if you guys want to try out ExpressVPN and protect your online activity, find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/firstdegree. That is ExpressVPN.com/firstdegree for 3 months free with a 1-year package.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Sometimes in your life, you need to hit the reset button. And Life Reboot on Podcast One's got you covered. It's time for you to live your best life. And hosts Leah Messer, Lindsay Riley, and Brian Scott are here to give you the tools you need to empower yourself and live life to the fullest.
And when you're in a place of self-worth, that's when you don't feel that need to kind of put people down and to judge other people for where they're at. It's kind of just like, this isn't right for my life.
Check out Life Reboot every Wednesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Let's get back to what happened that night. Bethany, Elisa, and her baby went downstairs after they got the signal. Whatever it was, I really also would like to know. And they went down and hung out with Elisa's dad.
So Elisa's dad had been asleep on the couch downstairs, and he woke up while the attack was taking place. And Bethany and Elisa told him that Adam and Josh were moving a broken television, which is
the most bizarro thing.
Like, yeah.
Well, if you were in your own house and they said there was a broken television, you would go downstairs and say, like, what's going on with a broken television? Did you break one of my televisions? And
yeah. And also, I just can't imagine that trying to move a broken television sounded like what was actually going on.
Right.
So the dad threatened to call the cops if the noise didn't stop. And then Elisa went to the door at the top of the stairs and yelled upstairs for all of them to be quiet, so the dad wouldn't end up calling the cops. And later on, she admitted that she heard Josh saying, die, die, accompanied by sounds of a struggle.
So Bethany and Elisa, they leave to drop off Bethany's daughter, as you do, off at a family member's house. So the kid's not there anymore, but then they get back to the Hickory Street home. Josh and Adam obviously are still there, and they see Terrence and Eric, and they're unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
The girls are both scared that the bodies would reach out and grab them, like zombies mm-hmm. or something. So the boys hogtie the victims with these laundry and extension cords in case any of them come to or regain their consciousness. And then they claim to have heard a gasp or a sort of zombie noise, which is a zombie noise from one of the victims. And then they don't hear anything else. And that's when they realize that they had actually killed Terrence and Eric.
I want to go to the zombie noise thing because I feel like that comment shows how out of touch with reality that they are with what they had just done.
Mm-hmm.
That they're thinking that these people might just turn into zombies and like, haha. That's just not what you think after you see a dead body as an adult.
Using the term zombie,
yeah.
Where they might have a second life and it's a different type of life. It's a zombie life.
Yeah.
It's just so... it's so odd.
It's bizarre.
And using that, not a death rattle, which is potentially what this was,
because you always hear about that. You always hear about somebody like having a death rattle where if you potentially move somebody who has died, the last bit of their air will come out of them and it'll sound like something.
I'm being really quiet because I'm at like a total loss because this is so upsetting.
Yeah.
The one observation I will make is that saying that it's a zombie noise, and I read that this is what they said at the time on scene, is an admission of knowing they were dead. So I think it's like, because zombies are dead. And I think saying that we thought they were unconscious, they made it. No, you knew they were dead.
Yeah.
You knew they were dead. And this calling them, it's just an admission. But
no, saying it's
so
a zombie
immature.
Noise means that they died and then they're eventually coming back.
No, they're so immature. These kids are just.
Well, it's
sick.
Like you're thinking you're in a f-ing movie or a video game.
Yeah.
It's odd.
No, they're playing Resident Evil or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So Adam and Josh, they search the bodies. They take the cash that they knew these guys had, which is the whole reason why they said to invite them over. And they tell Bethany and Alyssa to go buy cigarettes. And the girls, they search Eric's vehicle and they take several things, including CDs, stuffed animals, and a pair of baby boots.
Which were probably a gift for someone else because he didn't have a kid.
Yeah.
It is the fact that you just killed someone or were involved. I get that Alyssa and Bethany didn't use their hands to do so. Mm-hmm. But the cavalier attitude around this, when this woman has a young woman has a child,
yeah,
is the most confusing juxtaposition.
No, because we're talking about CDs, stuffed animals, and baby boots. How much is that? And then, Jack, how much money did he have on him?
Terrence had $100. So all of this for $100 is insane. So then after they took all of their stuff, they all left the house on Hickory Street. They bought cigarettes and cocaine with the money that they had taken from Eric and Terrence. When they return, they did all the cocaine and they kicked the bodies and hit them with an empty liquor bottle, which it disgusts me to even say that.
No, it's just the lack of understanding for what they've done or the apathy about it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're right on the cusp age-wise where they should have a much better understanding than they seem to have. But, you know, Josh was asked about the events of that evening and...
By the way, Josh is not young. Josh is 24 and you're 4 years old.
24.
That's right. You're an adult.
This is a mixture of like sociopathy and immaturity.
Yeah.
And I would say probably 50% of them, I don't know which, because this is very much like hive minded, where it's like, I bet you two of them are really f***ed up and the other two were just following suit. Yeah. I mean, there's no, how'd four people like this find each other?
That's what I was wondering reading this case. I'm like, how do four psychopaths find each other?
Right. And that's why we won't say who's the psychos.
Right.
We don't know because they all conformed.
Josh.
But anyways, so let's hear what Josh had to say as far as what happened. And again, this guy is a criminal psychopath. So everything he says is suspect. It's just to get a peek into his brain, not to take it as fact, his account of events. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to punctuate that. So let's have a listen.
The guys came in and everything, and then the girls didn't want to f*** them. So then when the girls went downstairs to smoke a cigarette, when the girls went downstairs to get the cigarettes, I came back in the room and I was like, hey, it's time for you guys to go. And they're like, what? We ain't going nowhere. So I was like, I hit the one guy in the side of the head and I was like, get the f*** out, blah, blah. He starts pushing me. We start pushing each other and everything. And we go into the kitchen area. His buddy and Adam, they're sitting on the couch like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm in the kitchen area and I'm punching him. And his buddy comes up behind me. He's like, man, let go of my cutty, white boy. I'll f-ing kill you this day. Get off my cutty. So I take Terrence and I put him in the headlock. I'm still hitting him and everything. And his buddy comes up and f***ing like shoves me down. So I'm back on my knee and got Terrence in front of me. And he kicks me in the face, like f***s me, like f***s my face up. And I'm yelling at Adam. I'm like, man, get this motherfucker off me. Get this dude off me. What the f*** where you at? Get him off me. So eventually Adam came like, come on, man. One-on-one. And me and dude were fighting and everything. I'm still holding him. And then dude comes up and hits me again. And Adam finally like takes them, pulls them back into the living room. I don't know what they do. And then I finally, I'm holding him, and finally he stops moving. And from what I heard in the trial, like I guess I was holding him like way too long, because he was still moving. In my mind, he was still moving. But what the lady was saying, he was spazzing out or whatever. So he was still moving, and when he stopped moving, I laid him down. Then I went into the living room to check on Adam and the other guy. Well, Adam's on the other guy's back, holding his neck back like that. And he's like, oh, blah, blah, I heard his neck snap. He vomited on my coat. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, well, get off.
Yeah.
So I take dude with the dreads, Eric. I take his head, and I shake his head, and I stick my fingers up his nose, see if he's breathing or something. Like, see if he's breathing. Well, he ain't breathing, so I drop his head, and I'm like, oh, I run in the kitchen. I start kicking on Terrence. I'm like, dude, get up. Bitch, get up. Move. He doesn't move, so I pick his head up, and oh, shit. I see blood coming out of his nose and mouth, so I drop his head up. I'm like, Elisa was trying to come in the door. I told her to stop, wait outside the door. She's like, what's going on? I'm like, don't shoot, just shut up. Don't worry about it. So me and Adam, we grabbed the dreadlock one, threw him in the spare room. We grabbed Terrence, the bald head one, threw him in the spare room. And then I put a towel down because Terrence's mouth was bleeding. I put a towel down so it wouldn't get on the carpet and everything. And I shut the door. Well, I cleaned up the mess, cleaned up some of the blood off me, cleaned up the kitchen. And Elisa came in. Bethany, I guess, was still downstairs doing something. Elisa came in. She's like, oh, my God, what's going on? I'm like, don't worry about it. Just chill out. Bethany came up, and she's, like, saying the same thing. She's like, where'd the other guys go? This, that, what happened? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Just shut up. I'm, like, vibrating everything because I get, like, anxiety. So I'm, like, shaking. Then Adam finally tells them, was like, hey, blah, blah, we got into a fight. We killed them. They're dead. They're like, oh my God, are they dead? Blah, blah, this, that. So we went to the spirit room, opened up the door, showed them. They're like, oh shit, they're really dead, blah, blah. And then Elisa was like, what if they get up? What if they're like zombies or something? And they pop back up. Oh, well, we laugh about that and joke and shit. And all. I tie them together,
Yeah.
And then, the eyes, Elisa was like, the eyes are freaking me out. So I put bags over their head, just put them over their head. And then after everything, we went and someone stepped on my PlayStation, like I wrote in there, someone stepped on my PlayStation. They were saying that we were playing video games and stuff throughout the incident. It was playing Error. It was saying Error, and it was playing intro music. And the game wasn't even working at the time. So when they come in, we had more stuff to worry about than worrying about a broken game system. So we're sitting there, we're trying to figure out what to do. And then we're like, I really need a cigarette, And then Adam's like, well, they're supposed to have money. I'm like, oh shit, yeah. So we go in there, move their bodies around, check their pockets. Then we grab the pockets, go to the girls, give them all the money. And we're like, hey, go fill up the tank. And grab some cigarettes. So they went, grabbed a pack of cigarettes for all four of us and filled up the tank. They had, on both of them, they probably had like 120 all together, plus like a couple bags of weed and a little baggie of coke. Well, the girls left, they came back, and then we're still talking about what we're going to do, how we're going to figure this out, what the do we do. So we're throwing like ideas around this, that. Her dad's still downstairs. We're like, well, we gotta wait for her dad to leave, go to work and everything, then we can do all this.
So holy shit, he just detailed killing two people like it was nothing.
One thing that I think is really interesting is how he keeps forgetting the names of Terrence and Eric, and sometimes he calls them, I was fighting dude over there, and then I came back, and then he's like, oh, and it was Eric. And I'm like, are you actually forgetting these people? Or are you trying to disassociate
the humanity
of what you're doing?
Well, I'm sure you have to dehumanize to
your actions,
unhinge about what you've done. I mean, I think also...
He says it so nonchalantly,
also,
though. It's so odd.
I think he's a racist. So I think...
Absolutely.
So there's, you know, all sorts of things going on here, too.
And,
where it's
and
like,
he talks about... Oh, he threw up. He threw up on his jacket. So it's just like he's more concerned about...
The things.
The stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on about that with talking about the video games, which we'll hear. So it's like he's more concerned about the stuff.
I didn't want to get blood on the carpet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I cleaned the carpet really quickly. And it's like...
Are you... Really?
What about damaging the human being, which you've just, you know, snuffed two people out of existence. And he's concerned with the carpet. He's concerned with his video games.
He's concerned about his jacket. It's like...
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
So if you've ever bought a car before, and I'm sure that you have, you know how confusing and overwhelming the whole process can be. All the car dealers try to, like, use all these fancy words to confuse you, and I just don't like it. But all you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. So that's why we love True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car that you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one that you want, all from the comfort of your own home, which you know is my favorite thing in the world because I don't like leaving. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car that you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they'll set their true price competitively so they can win your business. That's amazing. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
What I also think we should point out is that, so his whole thing is that he and Adam killed those guys because they tried to rape the girls and wanted to have sex with the girls and didn't want to leave. And then he doesn't realize this because it's a subconscious admission. But he says, after they're dead, Adam goes, they're supposed to have money, right? They have money on them, right? Which proves that they talked about it before. Mm-hmm. How would they know that? Mm-hmm. How would they all be on the same page about they're going to have money unless they plan to rob them?
Yeah, it wasn't a spontaneous self-defense.
Thing. Exactly. It is so insane. All right. So all of this happens, right? This crazy, chaotic thing ensues. None of these four despicable perpetrators seem to know how serious their actions are. But now it's the day after the murders. And these four were discussing what to do with the bodies. And they mused about a couple possibilities. They talked about cutting them up and disposing the parts. Josh and Adam even brought over tools for that purpose. And they made references as to wanting to imitate what Leatherface did in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He talked about flaying one of the dead men and wearing his face like a mask, a suggestion which Bethany later admitted in interrogation made the group laugh.
The things that these people find comical are insane.
They're so, I don't know, are they just detached from reality or are they f***ing
deranged?
Psychos? Because I've never heard it. This is why I'm so... You know, this story needs to be told, but it makes me nervous because I'm disturbed.
No, this is getting all of us worked up over here. I feel like we can't even finish this episode if you guys knew how many edits we had to make because our feathers are very ruffled right now.
Very ruffled because we can't understand this as people with just even shreds of empathy.
Maybe a little bit of a conscience. It's insane.
Of course. And so this is the point. After they're throwing and ping-ponging around these possibilities, Bethany proposed calling your dad because... he would know how to dispose of the bodies. The group as a whole agreed on that. And Bethany called her father. And like we know, he said he would help, but then he called the police because he's not a psychopath.
Yep.
All right. So what do you do in this situation? I mean, we've all talked about, and you see these memes. You see memes on Instagram and on Twitter of, I would, you know, if I got a call from my best friend, I would help them bury the body.
Yeah.
You see that all the time. I will ask you both this. Would you help each other bury a body?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't really help anybody
do anything
that would break the law. Absolutely
not. Because asking me is selfish and compromise. Like,
yeah, no. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not helping you.
Illegal shit really is off-putting to me. And, you know, especially when it comes to the suffering of somebody else,
mm-hmm.
I would sooner die. Honestly, I would rather commit suicide than help somebody cause suffering to a family and to the person. I would never, ever even be on the periphery of something like that.
Okay. Now.
Something harmless, sure.
Sure. Tricking. I would lie if you wanted to lie to your boyfriend. I would.
Yeah. I would like help you like look into somebody's DMs or something like that.
100%.
But nothing illegal. Definitely nothing that'll implicate me.
Nothing immoral. Ethically corrupt.
No.
Nothing morally bankrupt ever.
No.
Do you guys have any friends who'd be like, yeah, I would totally do that for you?
No. I don't think so.
Really? Okay.
No, we don't have bad friends.
We've been friends for
a decade.
Yeah.
A decade. Okay. And we have a lot of the same friends. And I don't think a single one.
No, because we're all like decent human beings.
Yeah. No, hard no. No. Everyone.
Okay. All right. But this is different, though.
But it's your. I mean.
This is different because this is.
It's his daughter.
His daughter.
So?
His daughter calls him up.
My mom would call the cops on me.
You don't have a daughter, though. You don't have any kids.
Told me.
But you don't have any kids, though. It's totally different.
So you should be answering.
Wait,
this,
Billy.
That's what I want to tell you guys.
You
all right. So.
Would you help your kids hide a dead body?
Your daughter. Let's talk about your daughter because this is what Bill. Ooh, his name's Bill.
All right. If my kid called me up and said, Dad, will you help me bury not even one body, but two bodies?
Oh my God. Could you imagine receiving that phone call?
And I get a lot of awful, strange calls from my, not awful, but usually they involve, I need money, I need this or that, you know, but from my daughter. And I wouldn't. No, I would say, no, we're going to go get a lawyer and we're going to go to the cops. That's what I would do. Because they're going to find out, especially since you called me and probably called me from your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all going to go down really, really badly. So, no. Yeah. You call the cops and this guy did the right thing.
He did. And when we talked to Sarah, Bethany's teacher, she said, you know, some parents of the students she taught kind of, you know, it could have gone one of two ways. So let's hear what she has to say about that.
Yeah, I read that she left with her child, or she left, picked up her child, and then called her dad, and he to help clean up the bodies. And he was like, "No, I'm gonna call the cops on this one." And then she went to her grandma's in Kankakee, I think. But yeah, you never know with the parents. I mean, I'm hoping they would do what her dad did every time, but you never know. Completely agree that they did the right thing. But yeah, as far as defending, I mean, that's what you're just going to do for your child, I guess. But I'm glad they turned her in.
What happens next?
Bethany's dad calls the cops. All of them are arrested. Police arrested all four of them. Adam and Josh initially started the story about how Eric and Terrence tried to rape the girls, which we kind of mentioned earlier, which is what prompted that altercation that led to their deaths. The police didn't buy a second of that story. And Josh was the oldest. He was the only one with a criminal record. And the three other kids told police that the murders were his idea. He was immediately like made the mastermind of this whole situation.
Exactly. So let's hear from the mastermind himself from behind bars.
They're trying to say I was the mastermind of all this. I manipulated these people. I did this. I did that. Like, how is that even possible? Like I didn't even know none of them. The Bethany bitch didn't even like me. The Adam dude, I just met him 2 days prior to the incident. So how was I so, like, Jedi mind trick their ass? Like, how is that even possible? Like, the one girl didn't even like me, the other guy didn't even know me, and then the two guys that died, and the Adam dude, I did tell him, hey, get him off me, but I didn't say, hey, Adam, kill the guy. I didn't like state that. And then I wasn't the whole planning and everything. Everybody had their own little idea of getting rid of the bodies and everything. And I was thinking of NCIS, Criminal Minds, all that CSI crime lab shit with a piece of my hair on their body was gonna f*** us over. And it's just outrageous that they're looking at me like I'm a Charles Manson type chick. And how the f*** can I be that if I'm more slow-witted than half these motherfuckers around here?
While these four suspects are being questioned by police in custody, they reveal their intentions in terms of disposing of the bodies. And I know we just heard a little bit of that from Josh, but they really were trying to put all these plans into motion.
So Eric and Terrence's, their lifeless bodies are sitting in this house. And Elisa, Bethany, Adam, and Joshua, they're trying to concoct this plan on how to dismember them, get rid of the remains, and cover up this crime. So first what they do is they ditch the car, which is the car that Eric and Terrence drove to the house. And they leave it at an apartment parking lot, which is on the other side of town. And then they go to Walgreens for some soda and beef jerky.
As one does.
What the hell?
Then they consider putting the bodies in the vehicle and setting it on fire. But then they say that, oh, that would draw too much attention, obviously, because it's a car on fire. So they said, well, why don't we dump them in the water in another location? And, you know, it's funny because this guy was talking about CSI and NCIS and everything. And then they were actually going through this kind of thing, which is the worst things that you can do.
Right.
Bethany had told the officers that Josh wanted to keep the teeth of the deceased as trophies after they had cut up the bodies. So they were like, all right, we're going to cut up the bodies, but we're going to keep the teeth.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just like speechless.
I'm at a loss. Yeah. But it's just what they just did in Sharp Objects, too. It's like teeth are like a quintessential like killer trophy.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, at least Josh could have for sure been a budding serial killer. Like this kind of attitude towards mm-hmm. human life is mm-hmm. just unbelievable.
So Adam ends up going home and he gets supplies to aid in this disposal process. So it's the typical supplies, which are rubber gloves, bleach, a saw, and a blowtorch.
Maybe he still wanted to light the car on fire.
Right.
But as we know, the four of them never acted on any of these ideas. They never used any of this stuff because they settled on calling Bethany's dad for help, and then he called the police. So they had all of these grand ideas. Let's do this. Let's do that. Oh, we're going to cut them up, but I want to save the teeth. And all right, you go home and get all this stuff and get the blowtorch and everything. And then they said, you know what? Let me just call my dad.
Let's ask an adult for help.
Do you guys remember Unsolved Mysteries? I used to watch that show every single day when I was younger. It was like the ultimate true crime show. Robert Stack was amazing. It featured episodes of disappearances, murders, everything that you could imagine and more. And now you can watch it whenever you want, 24/7 for free with Pluto TV. Pluto TV is free TV with over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, and everything is for free. No credit card is needed. No sign up. I literally don't know how they do it. I'm not going to ask questions. It seems too good to be true, but it's real. Pluto TV is easy and completely legal way to watch all of your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you guys waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. Again, that's Pluto TV. And we can start talking about Unsolved Mysteries together. We love them. Pluto TV.
Everybody who heard about this case was just disturbed. And the Joliet police chief, Mike Trafton, was quoted of saying of the case, "This is one of the most brutal, heinous, and upsetting things I've ever seen in my 27 years of law enforcement. Not only the crime scene, but the disregard for common decency towards human beings."
And that's pretty much how I feel like we feel and how everybody else is going to feel listening to this podcast as well.
Right. But I think one of the big takeaways for this is just like monsters are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they invite you to parties. They will give you a beer. They hand you a controller to their video game. You know, you're playing games within 1 second. This is not. Listen, murders are uncommon statistically within the human population. But within murders, this kind of depravity isn't.
Mm-hmm. No, when you're at a place where you think is safe. You've been invited to somebody's home.
Yep.
They're all thinking, we're going to do something to these people, and you have no idea. You're just there to have a good time.
No idea.
That is not, of the 15,000 murders that happen, or 16,000 actually, that happen in America, that is an incredibly small percentage. We're talking 1% or 2% of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You're just sitting there, I'm having a good time, and these people around you are thinking, we're waiting to jump on you mm-hmm. and do something bad to you.
Exactly. And I feel like people who engage in kind of really high risk lifestyles are kind of a little bit more on edge, a little bit more aware of their surroundings, a little bit more dialed into walking into dangerous situations where they could possibly like pick up on something. These guys were completely vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to Sarah about this, our first reconnection. And I'm just like, when you read the accounts of this, it's these sound like 45-year-old hardened criminals who've just been messed up their whole lives.
And have been doing this kind of stuff their entire lives.
Three of these kids had no criminal background. The victims had no criminal background. It's just like, how? And you wouldn't be on the defense. They're young. They're all under 25. Mm-hmm. Why would you think you'd be in danger playing Grand Theft Auto and having some beers with your friends? All right. So let's hear. I mean, obviously, Sarah, our first degree connection, lives in the area. She heard of this crime. Let's hear her reaction to hearing about this, and not only hearing about this, hearing that one of her students was directly involved in this and another student who she knew.
I have not heard of anything that gruesome happen. I mean, there are definitely murders that happen, senseless murders, I'd say, but definitely not to this extent. So in terms of coverage of it, I found out we have the Joliet patch, well, the patch for each county or area around here, and I found it on there, which is just local news stories. I honestly, and I'm not sure because I don't watch like live news broadcasts, so maybe that's why I didn't see it a lot. But my parents didn't know about it, you know, and they live relatively nearby. And a lot of people that I've talked to, like a lot of my family members, did not know about it. So there wasn't even that much coverage of it, which is the bizarre thing. This was like a disgusting, you know, act, and it was just not talked about. It was not talked about at all. Definitely this is like our area's urban legend, but in reality, it's real. And that's the most disturbing part of it. It's not just, you know, what happened in this house, blah, blah, blah. This actually happened. And it's weird. I remember it was surreal to like tell my family about it because it's very strange being connected to one of those people that were involved. And yeah, it doesn't seem real. And everyone, every time you tell the story, everyone gasps and is disgusted by it. And it's just like, this is real. This is real life, unfortunately.
So I know what we've said so far in this episode is haunting, abhorrent, despicable. These actions of these perpetrators really couldn't get any worse, but unfortunately they do. And just when nothing surprises me anymore, I hear a case like this and it recalibrates my entire brain.
Absolutely. And we have run out of time today because we're trying to include everything that we can in this case. So this is going to be a two-parter, and we're going to leave you with this clip of what's to come next week.
The biggest detail that was the most disturbing for me was hearing about the sex on the mattress on top of the body.
Thank you for tuning in to The First Degree. Check out new episodes every Wednesday at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
Sources for this episode include the Joliet Patch, the Chicago Tribune, and CBS News.